He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Windy City intern back there interning. You guys are about to be up, all right? You guys are, this is your opportunity. And really, again, I have to stress this. This can either be your opportunity to be famous if you want, or it's your opportunity to really stink but be so awesome in that. You know, it's kind of like when I dance. Like my wife has, you know, for years of her life, she was a choreographer and a dancer and, you know, she did all sorts of work in that world. And every time she forces me to dance in something, I realize that I am making a fool of myself. But
you're winning your wife over.
I do it with pride. And you know what? I win the prize. I win the prize for that. The prize is my wife. So in this process.
Not that we're equating our wives to prizes.
Well, you know, yeah. But I definitely I got lucky when I got that one. There we go. So I will say this. Keep in mind, if you're awful at singing, but you own it, you could still have the opportunity here. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Two tickets to Chris Stapleton is the prize. Bridgestone Arena, Friday, October 13th. Julian, did you want to chime in on this?
So I have three different songs, Chris Stapleton songs, for you guys who call in, and I will play you in, and you will sing the chorus. So please try not to butcher.
Oh, I was just going to let him sing by himself.
I'm not going for that. If they're bad, we can at least turn it up and drown them out with Chris Stapleton.
Oh my gosh!
Wow, you know, I thought
we were embracing bad.
I was embracing. Okay, so I was just going to make you guys go a cappella with it, but no. Julian Council has
acapella
it.
Is pretty hard.
So yeah, well, you know, I was just going to let you spit your flow, as the kids say. And
no one says that. That's not a phrase.
That. Okay, so as the kids say, spit your flow. 615-737-1025. That's the phone number.
As we said, what could possibly go wrong with
this? Yeah, nothing could go wrong here. So Chris Stapleton, that's where we're going to go. So you can still chime in. We still got a couple lines open. 615-737-1025. We'll start with Jessica. Jessica, first and foremost, thank you for calling in and being very courageous. You've got a good shot here.
Thank you.
Okay, so Julian, I'll let you take it from here.
Hello?
Sing along, Jessica.
I don't know, but I can't hear the lyrics. I can't hear it.
Julian totally screwed this
up. Yeah. Take Julian's
out. Julian, pull the music down.
Jessica, go ahead, just sing for us. Sing for us,
Jessica,
whatever you want.
Jessica, sing for us, please.
All right. Okay, wait, hold on, sorry. I can treat you away. Outside Jack, outside Jim, outside all them things, but I can't drink you away.
Woo-hoo!
All these nights I can't swim out of this skin I'm living in. Say, now tell me, baby, something make a medicine for heartbreak. Sorry.
Jessica, that's great.
Okay, Jessica,
that is
great job. That we got one down. Jessica,
that
great job by Jessica.
That is tremendous.
Intern.
That is owning it right there.
Windy City intern has contact information. So
that's owning it.
So Jessica, so far we're one for one. One for one on this. We'll go. What? We're gonna go to Chase next up. 615-737-1025. You're trying to sing your way to two tickets to Chris Stapleton. Chase, all right, come on, Chase, you're up. Thanks for you're gonna be courageous here, Chase. Right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right, go for it, man.
All right, so what do I sing?
Whatever you want.
Any song.
Well, Chris Stapleton song.
Oh, okay. 'Cause I'm just a traveler on this earth. Sure as the pocket on my shirt. That's about all I know.
All right. Chase chiming in. All right.
That's why I was going to play them on with songs.
Yeah, but see, everybody,
but then you have to coordinate that. It's going to be very difficult. I see what you're trying to do.
Everybody has different keys, you know. it gets very particular with
or
this.
Or we have no keys.
That's a fair point, too. Okay, 615-737.
So far, I think Jessica's in the lead.
So far, yes. 615-737-1025. Somebody's going to win tickets to Chris Stapleton, in this process. And we're giving you the shot. If you want the music, you can let us know. Or if you just want to go a cappella, you can go that way, too. We can do it either way. 615-737-1025.
The show is sold out, folks.
Yeah.
Can't get tickets, so call in and sing, and you can get tickets.
Yeah, we're going to make this difficult for people, as it should be. Corey chiming in. All right, Corey, do you want music, or you want to do it yourself?
I'll just do it myself, I guess.
Attaboy.
All right, attaboy, Corey. All right, yeah, whenever you're ready, my friend.
Sometimes I cry.
That's it?
That's it? Was there more, Corey?
I can keep going.
Yeah, keep going. Keep going. That was radio gold. Keep going, Corey.
Keep going.
Sometimes I cry.
That's it.
He's used one line. Corey.
Keeps going over and over.
Oh, Corey, that's well done. I like the fact that he went with that line with such gusto, though, right? Like,
I know he came out of the gate strong, and I thought this is going to be really good, and then it just
I'm concerned
stopped.
That's the only line he knows, though. 615-737-1025. You've got Julian is literally just holding his head in his hands.
I want
at this
Julian
point.
To sing Tennessee Whiskey for us.
That's where we are. 615-737-1025. We'll give you another minute or so to chime in. Now, which one do you like? The gusto.
I'm going with Jessica because she got all the words right and knew a lot of bars.
Yeah. Well, so
stanzas,
okay, here's
lines.
The thing. Jessica know. Knew more. But Corey went for it. I mean,
yeah, but you need more than like four words, I think.
That's a fair point. Windy City intern and Julian Council, did you guys have a favorite? Julian's not even acknowledging this.
we told you this was.
Yeah, Windy City intern,
sure
did you have a favorite
out.
Between Jessica and Corey? Just one or three? Which one did you like? One or three? Okay, so she's in the Corey camp. She's in the.
Oh, so you're the deciding
she's
vote.
In the, she's in the Corey camp. Julian, do you want to vote at all?
No, I wouldn't. Right,
he's just crying his way through this. This is all that's happening. Okay, well.
You decide. And then you're going to upset somebody.
I am going to upset somebody, and I hate it.
It's got to be Jessica.
It's got to be Jessica. I think Jessica wins because Jessica knew more. So we'll let Jessica.
She had like six or seven lines.
Yeah, she knew way more of it. So Windy City intern, you have the contact info. So Jessica, we'll make
See?
Jessica the winner. This is how we're going to start giving away tickets to really awesome stuff. We're going to make you sing for it. That's what we're gonna do, and fear not, Julian. We'll work out a karaoke option for you so that people aren't a cappella. I'm not even ashamed to admit that I have multiple karaoke subscriptions.
The a cappella is pretty funny though. Like,
yeah.
Like when you're going, it's first of all it's hard. So when you're going all in like that,
yeah.
And that's why Corey, if Corey had like two more lines,
yeah.
If Corey just had three lines that were just that type of gusto and nailing them at all three of those lines, I would have been no question, Corey.
Yeah.
But you can't just sing the. You need more than one line.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So there we go. Two tickets to Chris Stapleton given away. In the meantime, you've pulled up some golf fashion that I think is really fantastic.
Yeah, I
here.
Think it's weird that you think that you just now have figured out that golfers dress weird.
No. It's not that they. And let me clarify because you pull that up. Yes, I know for a long time golfers have dressed weird. What surprised me was the revelation of how trendy golfers are dressing right now. I used the wrong word. The amount of like puffy vests and skinny jean type, like skinny running pants into high tops. Like they are all dressed. Like I feel like I'm in LA and I'm at a coffee shop where half the people want to be hip hop artists. Half the people are pop artists.
Right. But what like, would have been trendy in like 73 and what would have been trendy in 84 and what would have been trendy in 97 are all
those,
different than what's trendy today.
Those neon knickerbockers were never trendy. Okay. Like that's the, like they look like. The cool kids that are at a show. Like when I was out with the band and we would go to like a Kanye concert, they look like many of them look like they're dressed in that world. That's sort of what I mean.
They used to wear, so like if you watch The Legend of Bagger Vance, a great Will Smith film, of course, you'll see like they're wearing ties and like vests and like full suits. So like that was very trendy at that point. But that was like 1912. You know what I mean? Like so I think that golf attire has always been strange over the years, and I think you could argue trendy, whatever that means. Almost at any point, like you're right about the knickers are not necessarily, but overall golf attire now it's gotten very sleek in the last 10 years because of technology and like Under Armour and Nike and all these apparel companies that are getting really, you know, the dry fit and all that stuff is very sleek. But I think golfers have always dressed ahead of the curve, if whatever that means.
I think right now when I watched the British Open, I felt like they were all dressed like they're the cool kids. That's the difference. Like they all
right.
they're dressed like they walked straight out of some sort of a, you know, Gap ad or something. And yes, I used Gap, and I couldn't think of another company.
That's the trendy.
Yeah, I couldn't think of another company. I'm sorry. I don't know. Nothing. I've got nothing at this point. They walk straight out of like an Express ad or something. You know what I mean? Like they all look very, very well dressed, but very trendy and very like hip. Instead of looking
Why don't
you weird
just say,
or
just go with structure at this point.
Yes. And they all look like they again. I use the boy band analogy because they look very like it looks very sleek and very modern and very now. We need Jessica to call us back, by the way. Apparently, we're having a hard time reaching Jessica. So, Jessica, you won the tickets. You need to call us back. So, in that's what really stands out to me. It doesn't look strange to me. It doesn't look it looked to me, again, I'll use the analogy, like if you're backstage at a Bieber concert, I feel like they're all dressed like they belong backstage at a Bieber concert, as opposed to many of the images we've seen in recent years where, or not in recent years, in history of golf, the neon knickerbockers, the John Daly type pants, those do not belong backstage at a Bieber concert, but the outfits of many of the top golfers this year seem to, you know, the puffy vest, they got that look.
I'm scrolling through like the 60s and 70s, and I'm looking at a picture of Jack in like plaid pants and like a bright red sweater in like
the
70s.
So do you think that he would have in the 70s? He would have fit in backstage
Arnold
at an Eagles
Palmer
concert.
Could go backstage anywhere he wanted to.
In that outfit, would he have fit in backstage at an Eagles concert?
In 1972? Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that doesn't at all fit with the trend of like young hip at that time. That does fit with a trend.
Arnold Palmer was allowed into any party he wanted
to
go to.
No, but fashion. I'm talking about fashion of what he's wearing. You think that any of those outfits, and obviously Tiger was one of the ones that started to
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I reached
the trend. But
I think the golf has always been on the cutting edge of fashion. We just can't, normal humans just can't dress like that.
But the difference is what they're wearing now are what trendy normal humans are wearing.
That's probably why Jordan Spieth is relatable, is because he wears stuff that looks normal some degree.
You know, I think many of them did. Most of them throughout the process did. I think that was what really stood out to me. We need to get you updated on some huge Preds news. Victor Arvidsson locked up. What does it mean? We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing Braden and Fitz, ESPN. 102.5 The Game. I would call our first ever sing to win a raging success. So
I was going to go C-.
Fantastic work. By the more we have cool tickets to stuff, the more we may just integrate this to Julian's dismay. We'll continue to break that down and see what we can do to get people to have to earn their free stuff. I think that's fair. Make them work for it. Especially for Stapleton, a sold-out show.
Yeah, Chris Stapleton, you got to work for it. I'm okay with that.
Arvy's going to have to work for it for the next several years. 7-year deal, almost $30 million in this process, $29.75 million on a 7-year deal for Victor Arvidsson. Key note that you should know, they did go through the arbitration process, as Adam Vingham warned us they could, and post-arbitration, they signed the deal. So going into arbitration, the report was that his camp was asking for 1 year, $4.5 million. The Preds were offering 2 years, $2.75 million. According to reports, they go through the arbitration process. They come to a deal of 7 years and essentially $4.25 million per year. So it sounds like they made a compelling case to argue for themselves in the arbitration process, and the Preds came out and said, all right, if you're so strong on that, let's do it for 7 years. I mean, it, as simple as that is, I'm sure it was much more complicated, but it matches the pattern of David Poile. You have some success, you get locked up to a contract in the $4 million range, whether it's Craig Smith, whether it's Colin Wilson. You have some success, you get locked up into a long-term deal for $4-ish million.
I think the length of the deal is certainly the risk part for the Predators, and I'm assuming that's where Victor Arvidsson's camp sort of maybe asked for some maybe an extra year or two on that deal. And that there's some risk there involved, certainly, but that's the same with any long-term deal for any player. It's just risky to go 7 years on a contract, just in general. But it certainly feels like, since they went through the arbitration process, and the contract they signed was almost exactly what Arvidsson was asking, that it sounds like they went through the arbitration process and the Predators felt that the judge was going to rule in Arvidsson's favor, right? Like, that's what it felt like. The judge was going to say, yeah, you're a lot closer to $4 million than you are $2.75 million, which is what the Predators were offering at the beginning. So, and we all know that's just posturing. We know that's just, this is part of the game. But when the 4.5 is one end of the spectrum and 2.75 is the other end of the spectrum, and you settle on 4.25, it means the judge was going to give, it was going to lean Victor Arvidsson's way.
Yeah.
So
then at that point, it almost feels like, hey, if you know the judge is going to rule, let's get this thing locked up long term. You know, that's what it becomes immediately then. It's like, because remember, the only option out of arbitration, if the judge ruled, was a 1 or 2 year. You that was your choice.
Which
basically
still doesn't get him, of course, to his unrestricted free agency year. He's got 3 years until that, but now he's 4 years past that. So. And obviously the big story here, not only is one of the best players, the most, one of the more beloved players on the team now locked up for 7 years at a relatively affordable rate, especially if he delivers on what he did last year again and again and again and again.
Right.
Then he's a very affordable piece. Forsberg has got 5 more years on his contract. And when Ryan Johansson's deal gets done, whether it's 6, 7, or 8 years, whatever it may be, you're talking about a guaranteed 5 years of Jofa at the top of this roster. 5 years and roughly $18 million at the cost, give or take, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars either way, depending on what the Johansson deal looks like. So you're looking at $18 million bucks for what could be a top five line in the NHL. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
And then you look at the other pieces on this roster for the next few years, and you go for with Arvidsson, Forsberg, Ekholm, Ellis, and Josi, you're spending about $20 million a year for at least the next 2 years, and that's an extremely affordable core of your team. And then in 2 years, Pekka Rinne's $7 million contract comes off the books. So there's a lot of salary sort of flexibility this year. They still have, what, $13.5 million to spend on Johansson, Watson, and potentially Mike Fisher this year or a trade chip at the middle of the season. They're in very good standing right now with the cap. They look like they're going to be in good shape next year with the cap because they don't really have to make any big moves next year, and a few names are going to come off the books. The year after that is when you have to address Ryan Ellis. So there's still 2 years for having to address Ryan Ellis, which is the next big deal they're going to have to sign after Johansson. So once Johansson gets done, this team is basically locked in for two full seasons and probably longer once they make some more moves.
Which is a sign that they believe in what's going on and they believe in how this team is coming together. They essentially looked at the one major piece they wanted to replace should be needed, and they brought in Nick Bonino, and the rest of it is all about keeping the core and growing them, which is something in football we compliment all the time, and that's exactly what the approach seems to be. Speaking of football, throwing you a curveball here. I just saw this. USA Today Sports.
Speaking of football with a curveball.
Yeah, I'm throwing you a throwing a little.
How about a disguised blitz
route,
package?
Hot route,
there
hot
you
route.
Go.
USA Today Sports has tweeted out their 2017 NFL predictions, and the game Nashville apparently retweeted this a little bit ago. Very interesting to me. In the AFC, they have the Patriots going 16-0 in the regular season. 16-0. They have the Steelers going 12-4, winning the AFC North.
The Raiders.
The Raiders at 11-5. They have the Tennessee Titans winning the AFC South with a record of 12-4. They have the Titans going into this thing as a potentially number two seed.
Julian, let's get USA Today Sports on the show.
Yeah,
the whole thing.
I've already sent out the text message, so thank you for that. I'm way ahead of you. They actually have the Titans being the four seed and losing to the Chargers in the wild card round at home.
How could they be the four seed with a better record than the Raiders?
I don't know, man. That's what
yeah,
it said. That's what it said. They messed up, I guess.
Yeah, they would be the three seed.
I don't know. That's what I read. That's all I know.
Well, and based on tiebreakers, Pittsburgh at 12-4, they're tied for the second best record.
It looks like on the updated article, they have the Titans with the three seed.
They messed it up at first. At first, it said four seed.
But it is interesting to me that they have the Titans as a three seed losing in the first round of the playoffs to the Chargers, a six seed.
You know what's really crazy about this? They've got the Colts at 5-11 and the Jaguars at 8-8. Woo. What are you talking about?
USA Today.
You need to kick the entire newspaper in the no-no place.
USA Today getting kicked in the no-nos. But hey, 12-4.
Don't buy into Jacksonville, ever.
12-4. And really, the other interesting thing about a 12-4 finish, they have the Titans at 12-4, and the Texans at 8-8.
That's a large
gap. I mean,
they have
a four-game gap between the Titans and the rest of the division. That's significant. That's resting everybody at the end of the year. Significant.
I like the Chargers a lot this year, but if Mike Williams doesn't play because of the issue, that affects that, I think. Because I think their offense is going to sling it around. They're going to score a boatload of points. And I guess now Los Angeles, I should say. I would say San Diego.
Carson City.
The Carson City Chargers. They got the Ravens making the playoffs as well. The Dolphins at 7-9. Texans, Chiefs, Jags at 8-8. Broncos at 7-9. I mean, they're saying there's a four-game difference between the Titans and the Texans. That means you're winning almost every game in the division.
Yeah.
And that means...
12-4 is a statement year.
That's a different level than we've expected.
12-4, statement year. I'm not surprised. I don't think this is the first... I don't think this is the only... prediction we'll see that has the Patriots going 16-0. That's going to be the trendy conversation going into football season. Can they go undefeated in the regular season? So that's going to be a trendy piece of conversation. But I am surprised by the gap that they see in each of the divisions, because they have the Patriots winning their division by 9 games, the Steelers winning theirs by 3, the Raiders by 3, and the Texans by 4. That would be a staggeringly non-competitive AFC compared to some of what we've seen the last few years.
Titans by 4.
Oh, sorry. What did I say?
Texans.
Titans by 4 over the Texans. So That would be far less competitive than we've seen of recent years. So
yeah.
The hype train, it's a rolling. It's done left the station, y'all. It is going. So we'll try and keep you updated on that as things go. We want to get you updated on some on the hot news in college football. Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday coming up next. Spencer will join us. We'll continue to get their thoughts on Ole Miss. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Trying to get you caught up on everything that's been happening. But in the process of the big weekend in Nashville with Victor Arvidsson signing the contract, Sebastian Tortola being involved in another incident, this one in Arkansas, with all of that happening over the course of the weekend, we don't want to lose sight on, I don't know, a small coaching incident that seemed to happen last week, it seems.
Yep.
Hugh Freeze steps down. What does it mean for Ole Miss? What's going to happen next?
Air quotes there on the steps down.
Yeah, steps down. So Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday joining us. Spencer, when you look at this this Ole Miss program in the future there, where do you think they go from here?
I think there are a couple of different options. Now, asking what's going to happen at Ole Miss is a dicey question at best. Just look at their recent history and who ended up there. Their last coaches, when you roll through, David Cutcliffe fired despite being relatively successful there. Ed Orgeron hired for some reason, well before he demonstrated any ability to be a head coach. He certainly didn't demonstrate much of that at Ole Miss. Although, really, like they had some successes, and they had a great coaching staff. It's one of those like kind of indie bands nobody really sort of heard of that influenced everybody. You look at that coaching staff and you're like, wow, there's a lot of talented people here. What the hell happened? Then you end up with Houston Nutt and then Hugh Freeze, like a hire who was basically there because he was extremely Ole Miss compatible culturally. He was a really, really, really intense recruiter, and ultimately because he was successful. I mean, let's not forget that. Like, Hugh Freeze left on fire in this job, okay? Like, and not on fire in the good way, right? Charred, burned. It ended as badly as it could end. But it was pretty good there for a while. So where do they go? I don't know. You could choose stability. You could choose excitement. And I have a low, like, bar here for what I expect people to do. I think they'll go as safe and steady and stable as they possibly can.
Is that something that is a short-term solution for them? You know, hey, guys, Matt Luke is as steady and as boring as it gets, but he could bridge the gap to the next guy. Do we think the guy that they hire is actually somebody that's going to be there long-term, or are they just going to bridge contract, essentially?
I think it's going to be a bridge no matter what happens, because I don't think they have the window right now to hire, right? We're not in sort of turnover season for coaches. There's not a lot of availability, not a lot of things shaken loose. So you either deal with an interim, you deal with someone who is on the come up. You might be able to poach someone and poach someone pretty good from the lower ranks, right? Like if you hired your AAC or you hired your Sun Belt coach who was, you know, promising. That's, by the way, that's a route Ole Miss has done before. And yeah, I'm working to a specific suggestion here, but that's something Ole Miss has done before and been very successful, right? Hugh Freeze was at Arkansas State. And, you know, that's not the greatest, like, cradle of coaches until you start, you know, by reputation, until you start looking at who they've actually turned out, right? Brian Harsin and Gus Malzahn and Hugh Freeze. So, you know, which, by the way, that's who I'm suggesting. I think they go get Blake Anderson, because he's got some experience in Mississippi. He's very exciting. He's very aggressive, and he's done very well in that conference. But that's mostly so I can have one coach in the SEC whose coaching style I really like.
That's fantastic. I didn't see that coming. So when you start to think about this for this year, if you're the rest of the SEC and you look at Ole Miss, is it as simple as it's going to be chaos, pencil, and a win, or do you think that the talent there is still able to play through this and put out some competitive product?
I think there's enough talent there. They're going to be competitive, right? They can make your day a very bad day, right? I think it depends on how cohesive they really are and how many of those assistants they could keep in place. If you want an argument for letting Luke work and keeping everyone in place, it's looking at some place like Louisville that hired like a designated interim, right? or I'm sorry, Arkansas, like they hired a designated interim after they lost Petrino. And that ended up being a year of complete and abject misery where they were barely competitive in many games, even as the season wore on and they sort of got their legs under them. So there's an argument for letting the interim stay on and seeing what they can do. There's also an argument for seeing, well, if there's somebody out there who we think is stable and can provide us with a good competitive basis for the next, like, you know, 4 years, because remember at Ole Miss, by the way, by state law, they can only offer four-year contracts. They can't do something like Matt Rhule has at Baylor where he has a seven-year contract, right? The most stability they can offer is 4 years. I don't think that's a huge obstacle, but it's a little detail, and when you start to add up all the little details, including the not-so-little detail of this being a program in complete shambles at the moment, it tends to be a harder market the longer you look at it.
You mentioned coaches in the SEC and how you don't really like many of their coaching styles. Should every fan base in the SEC just settle for 9-3 until Nick Saban retires?
It might be a good thing to do. You might just want to hire someone exciting and hope for 9-3, right? Of course, that's not the attitude you want to have, but realistically, how many programs can compete with them? That's a really good question to ask, because I think the answer is probably more programs than you think. You just have to take certain tacks if your sole goal is beating Alabama, right? Because you probably won't be able to out-recruit them, because whatever system they've got in place there in terms of talent evaluation and overall kind of benefit package that they offer. By the way, I'm not being dirty there. I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, every school has a different sort of portfolio they present in terms of why you should come here. And obviously right now, Alabama's probably got the most appealing package, with the big chunk of that being your chances of going to the NFL are pretty good. But look at it this way. We're talking about Hugh Freeze, right? And this is a guy who was coaching, you know, I believe girls basketball at Briarcrest in Memphis a decade or so ago. And he ends up beating, you know, big bad Alabama twice in a row in 2014 to 2015 and giving them all they could handle in 2016. Now, you want to tell me that Ole Miss doing that is, you know, is amazing. There are programs with better resources and a better geographical footprint than Ole Miss. So what's everyone else doing, right? I don't think it's a matter of the lack of potential there. I think it's a matter of either the lack of will or the wrong strategies and the wrong approach to beating Alabama. So I'm not one of those people who's a complete doomsayer with it. There's no reason to be afraid of them, right? If Ole Miss can do it, frankly, anyone can.
We're talking to Spencer Hall from Every Day Should Be Saturday. Big Ten Media Days start today. What do you expect? I mean, I think we expect a little more personality out of that than we've gotten from some of the other media days. Is there anything that you're really expecting to come out of it, though?
Tuesday, P.J. Fleck. That's all.
Row the boat,
baby.
That's
all I care about, okay? Everyone else, you got some veterans. You got some people who are going to, you know, be real excited. Y'all in Nashville are very familiar with the magnificent, loud, and enthusiastic PR show that James Franklin will roll out for Penn State. It's a good one, but if you heard it once, you probably heard it 100 times. There's something new. Tuesday, it's P.J. Fleck. P.J. Fleck is 110 volts and like an 80-volt battery. There's a lot going on there. So whatever happens there, it'll be loud, it'll be fast, it'll be slightly out of control.
Which is our favorite type of media day.
Yeah, that is.
That's exactly what we're looking for. Spencer, who did you the Gators in the East was my pick at SEC Media Days. Why would Florida not be the favorite over Georgia?
Florida would not be the favorite over Georgia because of weaknesses in the defense. We've lost a lot in terms of experience and depth on defense. And I think the general theory among Florida fans, waiting to see how they replace all of the defensive talent that Will Muschamp recruited with the people that they've brought in. Jim McElwain's been a good recruiter. He has not been a great recruiter to this point, okay? That might change this year. There's a couple of big commits, especially on the offensive side, but I think people are concerned with how that's going to start to look as the talent they recruit gradually works its way up the depth chart and onto the field. So that's the big worry for Florida fans is, you know, can the secondary hold up? Can we get a pass rush? Can the thing that's carried Florida through so many games to this point begin as it winnows out? Can the offense make up for that? Everybody's very excited, by the way, that, like, Felipe Franks threw a ball 70 yards through the air. Do you know the last time we saw a ball going 70 yards through the air at Florida? It might have been Rex Grossman.
Guys, you can read him.
Jamarcus Russell, man.
Yeah. EDSBS.com. Follow him on Twitter, EDSBS. Spencer Hall, every day should be Saturday, man. We appreciate your time.
All right, thank you.
Great stuff from Spencer. Going to be a fun week for Big Ten Media Days. I'm not lying.
Harbaugh. Give me some Harbaugh, man.
You got James Franklin going to do whatever James Franklin always does. Harbaugh is going to be just a maniac that we're going to overcover.
Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is always outspoken about particular issues. He'll have something to say. Mike Riley's like the nicest guy in the world. Paul Chryst will just be regular old boring Paul Chryst. Lovie Smith. I mean, there's some interesting coaches in the Big Ten. There's some interesting dudes.
Well, all the interesting coaches in
Maryland, very handsome.
This raises a question about, you know, we just talked about Ole Miss and the coaching situation there. The real question is, why can't people do what Ole Miss did? We'll dive into that. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Been a fantastic game. Thank you to everybody that participated, by the way, in our first ever Sing to Win competition. Gene on Twitter came in and said, will you give away concert tickets tomorrow? I'll blow you gentlemen away if it's on the menu. Gene, if there's anything you should know about this show, we usually have free stuff almost all the time. So, you know, I think that we've got a pretty good chance of giving you the opportunity to sing. What for?
There are tickets tomorrow for Chris Stapleton.
Oh!
Hold on. There's not only are there tickets tomorrow for Chris Stapleton, there's tickets on Wednesday. Not only are there tickets on Wednesday for Chris Stapleton, the tickets on Thursday, and you guessed it, there's tickets on Friday.
Oh!
4 more days
of singing.
Of awful singing that I had to sit through.
Singing.
So bring it on, Nashville. Let's hear it.
Hey, we've got very talented people in this city.
Yeah, there's a lot of talent here. There's a lot of talent in the SEC. The question is, why can't that talent beat Alabama?
That's a funny line from Spencer. He's like, well, if Ole Miss can do it, then everybody can do it. And I agree with a lot of what he said. The expectations, and this is where this goes back to our conversation about national championship DNA. If you've got the resources and the access to players at Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, LSU, and A&M, you can compete with Alabama because they have the same semblance of portfolio that they can offer. Ole Miss does not. So the question is then, well, if Ole Miss can beat Bama 2 years in a row and almost beat them a third year in a row, why can't anybody else? Because Ole Miss is dirty as sin. Because they have 17 allegations that they're facing. Because their coach just got fired. Like, that's the, like, part of this is because of Hugh Freeze and what Ole Miss did to get to that point. Now, if you ask an Ole Miss fan, are you willing to have 8 bad years of football? Let's say that Ole Miss is awful for the next 8 years. Would you trade the next decade of bad football for those 5 years and that party where you carried the goalpost after Bo Wallace throws a touchdown all the way through the campus, through the Grove, into the corner bookstore to party? No way, you're not trading it. You would you would give up the decade of bad football for those 5 years of memories. Every single Ole Miss fan.
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of them. So the reason Hugh Freeze and Ole Miss can beat Alabama is because they're dirty as sin. And we all knew it from the word go. Do we have a coaching issue in the SEC? Yes. There needs to be some sort of coaching revolution or something. I don't know what it is. And I think if Nick Saban is not a human, right, if he doesn't exist, if he's not a person, he's not a thing, he's not at Alabama, I think we look at coaches like Gus Malzahn and Jim McElwain and Dan Mullen in a different light. I think we go, oh, you know what? Those are pretty good coaches. I don't know if we say that about Butch Jones or Kirby Smart or Brett Bielema or Kevin Sumlin. There's still a lot of major coaches in this league at big-time programs that should be competing for SEC titles that we still think could be very average and don't necessarily belong at those locations. So it is about the coaching. Whether or not, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan and I told you, hey, you're going to have 10 years of awful football, which they just sort of had. If you're going to have 10 years of awful football, but you're going to have 5 years of greatness where you're going to get to the SEC championship game once, I don't think Tennessee fans take that trade because they're used to more competitive football. Florida and Georgia fans don't take that trade. But if you're Kentucky, and I said, listen, you're going to cheat like crazy, but you're going to have the 5 best years of Kentucky football you've ever seen, and then your coach is going to get fired in one of the silliest and stupidest PR black eyes you've ever seen, fall from grace, and then 10 years of awful football. Kentucky fans are like, sign me up.
Yeah,
Let's do it.
I think that mediocrity, whatever perceived mediocrity or desperation creates that. And I'll always go back to when the Raiders continually lost in the playoffs in the AFC Championship game, and then they lost the Super Bowl. And I sat down with my friends and I said, you know what? If you're not going to win the Super Bowl, I don't even want to make the playoffs. It's not worth it. Then you go 13 years without making the playoffs. So I think going into that, that you're right. If your team's been good, you never take that deal. If your team's been bad, you take that deal. But I don't think you feel any better about it at the end of the deal. I will throw this. I don't know if you saw this quote. David Shaw, a good coach. And I have to get your – this is another hot route. Just saw
I
this
love David Shaw.
On Twitter.
Unless something bad happened to him.
No. But he threw a little shade on SEC country, not SEC teams. But he was asked about holding satellite camps in SEC country. And this is his quote. It doesn't make sense for us to go hold a camp someplace where there might be one person in the entire state that's eligible to get into Stanford. Yep.
That's from last summer.
Yeah, he said that. He said that a few times.
Well, yeah. It's resurfaced today.
Sure, of course it has.
From several.
Listen, it's hard to get into Stanford. Like.
But I think that's I think that's amazing. But Vanderbilt is in SEC country. And yes. They managed to find people to go there. So
now let's step back from the shade and make it a legitimate conversation, which is. Does Stanford recruit nationally and recruit a certain type of athlete? Yes, they recruit a different type of athlete than most Power 5 teams, not just SEC teams, but most Power 5 teams. And Stanford is very unique in that they're sort of the academic institution, Vanderbilt, Duke, Northwestern, and have achieved at a high level. They've been successful on the football field in different eras over time. I mean, Ty Willingham took them to a Rose Bowl in 99. John Elway played in the late 70s, early 80s. So they've had a lot of success, whereas programs like Vanderbilt, Northwestern, and Duke have had a couple of good years, and that's about it.
Right.
So, but does Stanford recruit a different type of player than Mississippi State?
For sure.
Do.
Well, and anytime you have a specialized recruitment, then satellite camps probably don't make the most sense for you. You know where your target audience is. You know how to get to your target audience. I mean, that absolutely makes sense. I just think it's always funny when they – because he's not wrong, obviously, and he's a very well-respected coach. It's just funny to hear him come
I just
in
love how people are going to freak out about this when this happened, like, last April.
Yeah.
Like, this came out of April of, like, 2016 when they had the whole satellite camp discussion with Jim Harbaugh, and now people are going to freak out about this for the next 24 to 48 hours.
Good.
An old quote.
July.
Yeah, I don't even know if people are really going to freak. Like, I think.
I mean, Steve Weiss from NFL.com just did it. Damn, quote tweet. He's like, dude, you live in the Bay Area. You should know. This was said last year.
And we know that he didn't re-say it. It's something that I don't know.
It's the exact same quote.
Well, Pac-12 Media Days is what? Coming up in a couple of days, next at the end of this week,
I think. I'm sure. Who knows?
So we'll find out. Listen, David Shaw is an excellent coach and has a pretty excellent track record of producing good teams, good talent, recruiting a certain type of player. So I'm a big David Shaw fan. It's why he gets mentioned for a lot of NFL jobs all the time. Now he's at his alma mater. He may not want to leave, but Stanford is just a different program. And the satellite camp discussion is so old. Like it's so old. Like they put rules in place. The rules are different. You can have 10 of them over a 10-day period now, and the SEC can quit its whining and bitching and moaning about it. And it's done now. We've figured it out and worked it out, and now we can move on.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how Ole Miss moves on over the course of the next week or two. I think the four-year contract limitations, which I wasn't aware of, and that was a new nugget to us this morning, or at least to me this morning, I think the four-year contract limitations also play to what we heard earlier in the day about what it looks like if this is a two-year bowl ban. Because if it's a two-year bowl ban, not a one-year bowl ban, you're signing somebody and they've got a four-year limitation, and you do buy into the fact that it's going to put them well behind on what they need for recruiting and maybe for the next 10 years. If you buy into that, it's going to be hard to get somebody to commit to a four-year.
Yeah, I don't know if the contract, like Spencer said, it's a small detail. It shouldn't be the deciding factor. I mean, if you're going to get paid $5 million a year and you can sign me up for 4 years, I think a lot of coaches will take that.
Yeah, well, it's a small detail, but there are a lot of big details involved with this job, too. So
it's down the list.
Well, in and of itself, it may not be a defining factor. At some point, you look at it and say, hey, are the players going to be great the next couple of years? Well, we got a bowl ban, and
the NCAA sanctions are the most critical piece of this puzzle. And when that happens, whenever it happens this fall, that's when you're going to narrow your list of coaching options, because there'll be certain guys that are interested right now, and they're calling, their agents are calling, and then if they get a 2 year bowl ban and 10 scholarships reduced, a lot of calls are going to dry up.
And I'm just asking a general question: is Ole Miss on a 2 year bowl ban with a bunch of scholarships reduced? Is that worse at that point than a middling small Florida school job for Lane Kiffin?
How dare you say that about FAU?
I would take the Ole Miss job if I'm Lane Kiffin.
I mean,
Ole Miss is a coaches care about the money. Like, they care about recruits and they care about money.
And I can jump right now to FAU, don't I do it?
You mean Ole Miss,
from
yeah.
FAU to Ole Miss? Yeah, sorry,
he would.
Ole Miss. From
oh,
FAU?
I think they...
That guy doesn't care. He'll go anywhere.
Yeah, he'll go. Now, the crazy thing about this is that, and this is the weirdness of all of this, he would be at LSU right now, but his agent is Jimmy Sexton, who is the power broker of the SEC, who's also agents with Hugh Freeze and Nick Saban. So the odds of him getting the Ole Miss job is pretty slim and none, although I did love his troll maneuver late on Friday when he started following all the Ole Miss people. Ole Miss Athletics, Ole Miss Football, Ole Miss Athletic Director, all of his follows were all
Ole Miss
people.
It's not really trolling, it's just him being thirsty for that job.
I think he was doing it on purpose just to like spark some internet conversation.
Nobody likes to be in the conversation more than he is.
But I wouldn't put it past him that that's what he actually wants.
Would it not be the single greatest thing for all of sports talk radio in the South if he got that job, though?
No, like, no.
I'm rooting for it.
No. I want Derek Dooley to get that job.
Well, I would like to watch real football, though.
How is Derek Dooley's name even up in conversation for the Ole Miss job? If Derek Dooley goes to Ole Miss and wins an SEC championship, my life will be complete.
That's the ultimate troll job.
Rest easy, sir. That's not going to happen.
Nobody trolls.
I'd like to watch an actual football team so Derek Dooley won't get the job.
But just the moment of Ole Miss, you know, running out and Lane running onto the field.
Oh, my God, it'd be brilliant.
I mean, it would make...
Coaching against Saban every year. Saban wins 72-3 every single season. Doesn't pull the starters until the last drive.
Oh, yeah. At the very, very, very end.
He rubs it in.
Above me on that, the first time he walks into Knoxville, oh, that'd be gold. That'd be so fantastic.
Well, he's already been in Knoxville a couple times.
Yeah, I know. So. But I'm just saying, the first time he walks in Knoxville taking over the Ole Miss, like, just to hear what the trolling chance
it'd be better if it was Derek Dooley.
Maybe he can hire Dooley, put him on staff somewhere.
The thing about fans and their hatred or love of former coaches, I never understood. Like, why did Tennessee fans hate Lane Kiffin if he sucks so bad?
Yeah.
Why do you hate, like, you should be fine with Derek Dooley because he's gone. You fired him. You got rid of him. And you should be like, all right, dude, peace out.
Yeah.
Have a go.
Because he wrecked their program.
Right, and that's bad. But, like, Kiffin, I never understood because every Tennessee fan hates Lane Kiffin, and then they say, oh, he sucks, he's awful. And I'm like, well, you can't hate him. And also say he sucks because he's gone because he left your program on his own accord. Like, you can't be angry at him leaving if you think he sucks.
Yeah, if your ex-girlfriend was an awful person and then she leaves you, you can't be like, she sucks. She's awful. I hate her. I can't believe she left me.
Right. It's like you should be ecstatic that Lane Kiffin left. The problem is Lane Kiffin's a really good football coach.
3D coming up next. I don't know what they're doing. It'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council, Windy City intern. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. Do it again tomorrow. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.